Support made possible by Strategic Farm Marketing. Strategic's annual series of crop insurance and grain marketing meetings are currently underway across the Midwest. Go to www.sfarmmarketing.com. to register for a meeting near you.
From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Matt Bennett. He's at agmarket.net. Mike Tenura will be here to discuss the weather forecast, and along the way, we'll turn our attention back to yesterday's signing ceremony for the USMCA and go through some of the comments that U.S. Trade Representative Bob Lighthizer made. I think you'll find of interest on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
March corn today in Chicago at the CME Group settled 4¾ cents lower at $3.79 and a half. The May at 384¾, down 4¾. July down a nickel at 389 and a half, and December 4¾ lower at 390 and a half. The weakness came in the soybean market. It plunged 16¾ cents in lead March at $8.76¼ for the settlement price. May at 890 and a half, down 16 and a half, and July at 904¼, 16 and a half lower. November beans 916. Down 13½ cents for the day. The bean oil 89 cents lower at $30.63. The bean meal down $4.60 at $2.91.50. July soft red winter wheat at $5.57, 3½ cents lower. The hard red July a penny lower at $4.86 for the afternoon. Live cattle futures in Chicago finished the February at 121.77 and a half, up 2½, and the April there at 120.20, 2½ cents lower. That for 100 pounds. Feeder cattle January contract at 142.45, up 35 cents, and lean hogs in the Febs at 61.30, down $3 even on the afternoon. Crude oil about $1.18 a barrel lower. Ethanol futures on nearly unchanged. Heating oil 6½ cents lower, and gasoline on the wholesale price at $1.49¼, down about 3⅙ cents for the day. The Dow's up, down about 129 points. The U.S. dollar down 0.15, and gold futures $10.70 higher. Matt Bennett is now here from agmarket.net. Good afternoon to you, Matt. I'd like you to take me through why futures are low and the cash price is really tight.
Well, you know, that's a really good question, and I certainly feel like we can shed some light. You know, I think that as I get out and I talk to people, most originators are saying that they just haven't been able to source the corn that they thought they might be able to, first and foremost. And so obviously the basis has been pretty darn strong. It doesn't matter where you go in the Corn Belt, and you're finding that the basis has been relatively stout. And so what we've been trying to tell folks is that we feel, you know, that we're going to be supportive as far as flat cash prices are going to be concerned. But we just don't know what this futures market's going to do. It seems to be going to where the futures market's focused more on a global situation, you know, where the basis is focused more on the U.S. situation. And so with the lack of a weather issue, you know, out of South America, and most people assuming that U.S. corn that's cheap right now in the world market, you know, is not going to be where people are going to be going for corn here in the next 2 to 3 months once South America really starts putting corn on the market. I think most people feel like, you know, the futures market is going to continue to struggle.
Yeah, so the transition here is different than what happened as Brazil came up, because there was a big importer, China in that case, for soybeans, and we kept the price of soybeans high despite the fact that so much of both the North and South American crop was being exported to a third country. This time around, I think what you're telling me is in the United States, domestic supply is out of place and maybe a little on the short side. However, on the world front, global supplies are holding down prices because the market doesn't need any more feed grain. And I don't know whether it's just corn or not, but maybe we could throw wheat into that, because most of the rest of the world feeds wheat. And that's wherein lies the problem for the futures market for corn. Am I close to putting that back together?
Yes. I mean, you know, essentially the thing that you got to ask yourself is that, you know, with ASF hitting China, Obviously, you've got a lot of people concerned about this coronavirus. And I don't want to make light of it, but it sure seems like it's going to be something that won't have near the impact. You know, it's obviously something such as ASF. But with ASF, you know, the demand for, you know, for soybean meal, the demand for feed grains certainly has been called in. And so you got to ask yourself long term, though, you know, the Chinese population still going to demand the same type of protein in their diet that they have in the past. And I think the obvious answer is yes, in that they're going to want to increase that. You know, as they get more money in their pocket, there's no question they're going to want to continue to eat better. So for the long haul, I think that it's good for protein, which should be good for feed grains in the long haul. But for the time being, the world just seems to be convinced that, you know, we've got plenty of global supplies. Now, you've dropped U.S. and world carryout for corn 3 straight years. Yeah, I would say in 2020, the assumption is that that trend is going to stop. And so with this being a futures market, that's part of the reason that it's been an extremely lackluster reaction that we've seen, for instance, to the phase one trading or phase one signing. And, you know, we talked about that previously. I said I didn't think that the markets would react with a signing. It would be more reactive if you get, you know, some corn loaded on a cargo headed to China, because obviously they haven't been a buyer of U.S. corn for quite some time to a massive scale. And the phase one deal would lead you to believe that that's going to change. We've got to hope that's going to change, because right now, obviously, our markets are in dire need of a situation like that developing.
So the export market and is the place we'll have to be watching at this point. What are you telling producers who have an awful lot of corn? I suppose, well, I don't know whether they have an awful lot of corn in the bin, more than usual or not. Maybe you'll have a better handle on that, or you can look back at the grain stocks numbers and give me an idea. But what do you tell them about the corn they have yet to sell, the old crop that they seem to have in abundance at this point?
You know, I think one of the main things that you got to think about is, you know, if you've got corn on a basis contract, obviously coming up here before too long, you've got to make a decision. Are you going to roll that to the May? Or are you going to go ahead and liquidate? And, you know, some guys may want to try to re-own in some way. But, you know, I guess the thing that whenever I say I'm supportive to flat cash values, I just don't know that you're going to see a rally out of you know, what you see on the board trade. I think it's more of a function of people are going to have to bid up, you know, if they're not able to source the grain that they thought they were going to be able to source, which is going to be more a function of the basis than what it's going to be as far as cash is concerned. So, you know, if the corn is in your bin at home, that's a different situation. We all know that the quality of the corn, pretty much throughout the Corn Belt, is not what we'd like to have. You know, even if you have, you know, your corn that was dried down to 15%, for instance, maybe in central Illinois, some of that was 22, 23, 26%. The problem is that doesn't always keep that great. And so if you're able to keep the corn and keep it well, I have to think there's going to be a basis play, a flat cash rally later on, maybe into the summer time frame. The key is going to be able to keep that grain and keep it in good quality. Now, if you do have another late spring, which a lot of people are forecasting, then I would assume that someone who's holding on to old corn in that second half of August going into September could be rewarded handsomely, maybe be just flat out a price maker instead of a price taker. But again, the key is, am I going to be able to keep my corn that long?
Yeah, and it'll depend at that point on what acreage looks like for the 2020 crop. So it could be a price maker, but from what level is the question, right?
Yes. I mean, there's no question that if you end up with 95 million planted in a really good summer weather pattern, that, you know, there's going to be weakness across the corn complex. But at the same time, you know, if it's someone who's feeding or if it's an ethanol plant, you know, sometimes when they need the grain, you know, if you're sitting there holding on to 50,000 bushels at home or 100,000 bushels at home and they know it's there, they're not going to pay you for it until they absolutely have to. But if they absolutely have to, sometimes a person might be very surprised by what they can get out of it. So, you know, I don't know that I would want to hold maybe 25% at the absolute most, but I do know that there's a lot of producers that are hopeful that they'll be able to keep it around and kind of see what happens here. Because, again, the late fall could certainly complicate things in the cash market. Interior basis levels could really make people raise some eyebrows.
Right. So new crop sales, both corn and soybeans. What's your best thought at this time?
You know, I think anything over $4 corn is a really good place to be selling corn. We've been fairly aggressive above $4 corn. you know, with the storage situation, the variable storage rate, you know, you could see 30 plus carry out to the July. And so if you've got bins, you know, we're telling people, especially in that situation, I want to roll out to the July at some point at 30 plus carry. If you plant a lot of acres, you're probably going to see that pretty easily. But yeah, I like hedging $4 each corn. $9.50 on soybeans, I think, is a really good place to be. I would want to sell a fair amount of those beans, but, you know, I guess I'm concerned that we're not going to get a lot of opportunities to get closer to 10 like producers were hoping for. They just need to sharpen their pencil and see what they can make work and then make a sale based on their own farm's profit margins.
And finally, you've been traveling a lot. Where have you been over the last couple of weeks?
You can just play that Johnny Cash song because that's where all I've been in the last couple of weeks. But I've been everywhere. I've been to Farm Futures. I've been to Wisconsin. We've been to the Dominican for a Bayer trip where I went down and made a presentation and then top producer seminar this week. So, you know, just in the last 10 days, I made 10 presentations, so I'm about ready to go home and get a little rest.
Yeah, well, you get some rest, and then later this winter time on the third day of March, I'll be looking forward to having you at the Beef House for our All Dag Outlook, along with another 15 analysts. We sure do appreciate you doing that one, too.
Yeah, absolutely. Looking forward to it. Always looking forward to that.
Hey, thank you.
Yep, absolutely. Thanks, Todd. You have a good one.
You too. That's Matt Bennett. He's with AgMarket.net. Joins us here on the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media and will be one of our panelists, 16 of them, in fact, at the All Day Ag Outlook coming up the third day of March. That's the first Tuesday of the month. The cost to come and visit with us over at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana, starting at 8 a.m. in the morning, Central Time, 9 o'clock if you're in Indiana and the Eastern Time Zone, is just $30. For that $30, there are 16 analysts. You'll get a Beef House roll and coffee in the morning, plus a noon hour lunch from the Beef House. You can't beat it. You'd pay $500 in a lot of places to do this. Just $30. You can come and see all the analysts you hear, or many of them, right here on Illinois Public Media at the All Day Ag Outlook. Sign up today. Register online at willag.org. Up next, I'd like to take you back to yesterday's signing ceremony that took place at the White House for the United States-Mexico-Canada Agreement, or the USMCA. Bob Lighthizer is the U.S. Trade Representative. He addressed the gathered crowd and outlined just exactly what he thought this update of the North American Free Trade Agreement would mean and how it worked across the aisle in a bipartisan way.
The President was elected in large part on his promise to change the direction of U.S. trade policy, a policy that for too long had led to exploding trade deficits, the outsourcing of U.S. jobs, and the brazen theft of American intellectual property. For many, NAFTA came to symbolize everything that was wrong with that policy. The agreement was highly controversial from the start and passed with a narrow majority in the House of Representatives. Many of those who cast votes in favor came to regret their decision. They did so because many of the promises that were made in order to procure their votes came to nothing.
A note here, NPR did a bio earlier in the year of Bob Lighthizer and how his views of the labor enforcement rules and trade agreements was shaped by NAFTA. You might want to go back and listen to it.
NAFTA's weak, unenforceable labor side agreement did not raise wages in Mexico. The outsourcing fears that prominent NAFTA voices, anti-NAFTA voices, came to nothing. And the situation got worse later in the decade when China joined the WTO.
You can nearly hear the disdain there in Bob Lighthizer's voice as he's making this address yesterday during the USMCA as it's related to China.
This experience colored every subsequent debate over trade policy, and nearly every trade agreement after NAFTA passed with an increasingly narrow majority, and often along party lines.
Note here, the Republicans would have been the ones voting in favor of the trade agreements.
President Trump set out to chart a new course. The Trump trade policy is designed to create more manufacturing jobs, protect America's competitive advantage in technology and innovation, secure greater market access for American businesses, farmers, ranchers, and critically, to change the stale politics of trade by creating bipartisan consensus around a new model that works better for all Americans. The USMCA achieves each of these goals.
Lighthizer here may have given Mr. Trump too much credit, especially as it's related to the labor enforcement that was added by the Democrats in December.
This great historic agreement is truly the result of extraordinary effort by many, many people. It is multinational, whole of administration, and bipartisan. It affects every sector, thousands of businesses, and millions of workers in our economy.
Here's where Lighthizer begins to explain how the trade agreement came together.
The complexity of this effort is perhaps best shown by the fact that in the early rounds, as many as 1,000 negotiators from the three countries would be involved. We needed experts on agriculture, manufacturing, automobiles, banking, telecommunications, labor, environment, and I could go on and on.
He does for a moment, but then turns his attention to the bureaucrats, the men and women that staff the agencies that help to put trade agreements together.
I want to show my appreciation to the inspiring men and women of USTR, as well as the Departments of Commerce, Agriculture, Treasury, Labor, Transportation, EPA, and other agencies that work so hard. These people work tens of thousands of hours for 2+ years, many going home at 2 and 3 o'clock in the morning, or not at all. Chief among the leaders of this effort is my Deputy Ambassador C.J. Mahoney. Since his confirmation 2 years ago, he has worked continuously on this effort, day and night, and 7 days a week. Thank you also, Ambassador Dowd, our agriculture negotiating, and the long-suffering Jameson Greer, who has the unenviable task of being my chief of staff. As I said 16 months ago, thank you also, Jared Kushner, my friend and partner, for all your work and guidance and support. I said before, from the heart, I mean it again now. Thank you to the cabinet members who devoted a substantial part of their terms to this effort, particularly the Secretaries of Treasury, Commerce, Agriculture, Labor. And thank you, of course, Larry Kudlow and Peter Navarro. The chief negotiator of the USMCA was Assistant USTR John Melley. He was, throughout, the one who's responsible for the 350 or so people on our team. John is the best example of a career public servant. He retires this week, and he will be missed.
You've been listening to some selected comments made by U.S. Trade Representative Robert Lighthizer during yesterday's USMCA signing ceremony. I hope that it gives you an idea just how hard it is to put a trade agreement together. On this Thursday afternoon, let's take a look at the weather forecast with Mike Tenura. He's at T-Storm Weather in Chicago. Hey, Mike, thanks for being with us today. So glad you're on hand.
Great being here, Todd, as always. Always a good time of the day on Thursday.
You know, I want to take a look at South America, maybe a little bit more in-depth today. Can you kind of walk me through Argentina to begin with? We'll get to Brazil in a moment.
Sure, that sounds great. Well, in Argentina, it was fairly dry from November through December, and then things changed on December 27th and 28th. That's when we finally saw a round of thunderstorms move through the key corn and soybean region, and then we saw several more thunderstorms after that. In fact, rains have continued on and off basically until about a week ago. That's when rain shut down again. But we saw enough rain in that period of time that at the moment, soils are looking pretty good, with most areas having been near to wetter than normal over the last 30 days or so. Now, there is another rain event on the horizon that comes in on Tuesday and Wednesday of the coming week, and it looks like enough rain is going to fall out of that storm system to prevent dryness from redeveloping. And that essentially means that we'll start to move into the middle part of February, and not have any dryness problems, even if it didn't rain again right after Tuesday and Wednesday. So basically, things are pretty quiet in Argentina at the moment, and temperatures are also going to be favorably cool. So the combination of at least near normal rainfall going forward and a lack of heat are typically fairly favorable for corn and soybean development.
Now, movement northward to Mato Grosso and Brazil. The whole place is big, so there's probably a difference from north to south and east and west, I would think.
Well, you're right, and it's mainly from north to south, with northern areas having a different climate than the southern areas that are adjacent to Argentina. And keep in mind that Brazil produces about twice as many soybeans as Argentina, so it's a little bit more of an important country, though, of course, both are important to the overall world supply. But the story in Brazil is basically a story of mixed rainfall. We've seen some rains over the last week. Our data strongly suggests that it was not enough to wipe out dryness. And if you listen every Thursday, we've been talking about this pretty much every single week going all the way back into October. So nothing's really changed. Yes, we've seen some rains here and there, and certainly some areas have benefited from those rains, but a larger area has managed to stay drier than normal over most periods of time. And so we think an argument can still be made for rain being needed in much of Brazil. Now, the soybean harvest season is beginning in the northern areas, and that'll start to pick up as we move forward over the next couple of weeks. And so we really like to see the rains now as opposed to a few weeks from now, because by then the crops won't be that sensitive anymore. But basically, we don't have a lot of rain coming up to those northern areas over the next week. It's going to start to dry out a lot as upper-level high pressure reestablishes, and that'll leave those driest northern areas still needing more rain. Now, more rain does show up in that region in about a week from now, and then it looks pretty wet for about 7 days after that. So basically, dry first, then wetter, and that creates a mixed condition for soybean development and for soybean harvesting. Now, also keep in mind, the second crop, corn, is being planted right behind that soybean crop. So it's also a mixed story for that crop, just because if it was totally dry for the next 2 weeks, it'd be an easy story. We're going to harvest very quickly, and we're going to plant corn very quickly as well. But since we see some rain out there on the horizon, that'll create a mixed scenario with some decent pockets and some wet pockets. And so just a mixed outlook, basically, going forward. Now, we haven't talked about the south, but keep in mind that the southern areas are the ones that have been a little bit wetter than those central and northern areas. Heavy rain is coming up to much of the southern region over the next 5 days. That'll basically finish off whatever sensitive crops are sitting there waiting for more rain. And then we'll start to think more about harvesting and planting once we get later into February.
Any items of interest to discuss in the United States?
Just that it's going to be real mild this weekend across the plains. The cattle and wheat areas will see temperatures well into the 50s, 60s, and even the 70s. And that's basically including much of Nebraska, Kansas, Oklahoma, and Texas. We did see some snow in those states a couple of days ago, but that will all quickly melt away across those states, so it will not be a factor anymore going forward. After that, it basically turns colder across the U.S. We'll start to see some rains and snows from Illinois and points onto the south and east as we move forward. So we'll turn wetter as February progresses in those areas. But off to the west, the rain and snow chances are a little bit iffier from lower humidities. So we think it'll probably be drier than normal in the plains and the western Corn Belt over the next couple of weeks.
Hey, thanks so much.
You're welcome. Talk to you next week.
Indeed. That's Mike Tenura. He's with T-Storm Weather out of Chicago, Illinois. You've been listening to the Closing Market Report on this Thursday afternoon. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Don't forget to visit our website, buy your tickets for the All Day Ag Outlook. Do that right now at willag.org.